The Promotion Man podcast continues on, and we are now in the year 2020.
Yes.
Which is great.
A lot of great things happening this year.
Yeah, and we had some really good, we've had some really good episodes. John Scott doing, you know, interviewing about the book he wrote, Tom Petty and Me.
Yeah.
My very first regional boss, David Kahn from Warner Brothers, and him kind of showing me the ropes on how to be a promotion man.
And we got some really great positive feedback on John and David, so that's great that people are enjoying our guests.
Yeah, and then so because the guests add such a great dimension to this show, we wanted to get a little deeper with the guests because we started talking about all these reunion tours for 2020. And one of the ones that I think might be one of the more exciting ones is the Black Crowes.
Absolutely.
So you had a buddy that you said, you know what, I should get a hold of him, right?
Yes, his name is Chris Payne, and he was with Deaf American and eventually became American. He was right there at the beginning with the Black Crowes, and we're going to talk about how some of the executives at that label, the top guy, was not a Black Crowes fan. And we're also got an interview I did with Chris Robinson 20 years ago that's going to almost sound like it was recorded yesterday because it's just as topical and just as relevant 2020 as it was in 1999. So, Chris Payne, welcome.
Hi. How's it going, guys?
We hear you're shoveling snow today.
Absolutely. Shoveling snow and trying to stay away from CNN.
So where are you shoveling snow, just so we know?
Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Never heard of James Madison University. That's their claim to fame.
Right. Awesome.
Well, why don't we go ahead and start, first of all, by letting the audience know a little bit about your history, you know, how you got in with Deaf American and working with Rick Rubin, who got that going. So maybe start us off there.
Sure. I wanted to get into the record industry. Went to Belmont University while I was there. I interned at the majority of the country labels and became friends with the brand new Geffen rep. And this was in their heyday, you know, when they had Tesla and Whitesnake. And
Guns N' Roses.
And Aerosmith. So, yeah, all these heavy hitters.
Right.
And so when, you know, he brought me in with them, and then we transferred over to Deaf American, basically.
Gotcha.
And I took the Dallas position. And obviously the hottest thing on there, I guess the reason for getting their own promotion staff was basically the Black Crowes.
So that was their first band that they had signed to the label, or were there others that just hadn't taken off yet?
Oh, no. Slayer was already signed at that point. Some other bands you probably haven't heard of, Trouble. Believe it or not, Sir Mix-a-Lot had been signed but not released yet. Yeah, that triple platinum.
My baby got back.
Oh, hey, can I interject real quick?
Sure.
Because this is what we do. So record sure. conventions would move around the country. So they'd be in New Orleans, they'd be in Los Angeles, they'd be in Chicago. So there was this one record convention where all the record label people and all the radio people would come together and just party their asses off.
Right.
And Sir Mix-a-Lot, Baby Got Back, they went and built this hot air balloon that was about 30
exactly
feet tall.
I saw that.
And they tethered it to a yacht and put the yacht, and it was right outside of Malibu, off the coastline of Malibu, and there was this huge party on the beach in Malibu, part of the convention.
Right.
So it was all like invitation only and a lot of partying going on, and here is this Baby Got Back balloon.
The funny story behind that is that Dirt, Mark Dedea, the president of Deaf American, went to Hitmakers magazine and said, hey, can we have your permission? You know, we're going to put up the big ass, you know?
The big ass, it was called.
They said, absolutely no, we're not going to have any record company involvement, no promos on the beach, blah, 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 strictly Hitmakers things. So, of course, Dirt, being the Guido that he is and all his brilliance, says, heck with those guys, and you're right, Ian. We're sitting out there having drinks. I'm standing there with Glenn Danzig, and all of a sudden you see something inflating off the shore and gets bigger and bigger. So, and it's Sir Mix-a-Lot ass.
So shut up. I was there too. We could have been drinking right next to each other and didn't even know it.
So. You know, I even know the history of that ass, Fred. That ass. from the collection, inflatable ass, actually in Cat Collins' garage in Atlanta, because when it was on top of the Tower Records there, they had a drive-by that pretty much put it to rest.
I'll find that photo and post it.
Oh, yes.
So that people can look at a visual of a very large ass.
I love how Chris said, if you want to know the history on that ass. I mean,
it's like talking about babes, right?
Exactly.
It's like boys talking about girls.
It's too funny.
All right, where were we in this interview?
Let's get
sorry
back
about
to the
that.
Black Crowes. So the Black Crowes, you said the reason they hired a staff is because the Black Crowes were the biggest thing on the label. They needed to get it out there, and that's where you came in. And tell us about the Black Crowes coming to the label, but it wasn't an easy process for them to get there, right?
Absolutely not. Two guys are basically key for bringing them to the label. A guy named Brendan O'Brien, who actually played a lot of guitar parts, that solo that you hear on Hard to Handle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Jeff Cease. That's Brendan O'Brien playing that kick-ass solo there. He and a guy named George Mercolius. And George was good friends with Rick Rubin and was pretty adamant about getting him signed. So he got a little bit of money out of Rick and went down to Atlanta, did the record. The first 500,000 copies went out. Rick refused to put his name on the back of the album.
Really?
And it wasn't until the second run of 500 that he actually, if you look back and now it says executive producer Rick Rubin.
Wow. There's a collector's item opportunity.
Yeah.
Pete Angelus came from the Van Halen camp. Because Pete Angelus was the sound guy for Van Halen right out of the get-go in 77 and 78. And 78 is when Warner's released their debut. And then when David Lee Roth decided to do his solo stuff and Dave TV for MTV and all the videos and even Hot for Teacher video and a lot of those, that was a lot of Pete Angelus' relationship with Dave. And it was my understanding that once all of that infighting came to a head with Van Halen, Pete and Dave went out on their own. And that's why I think Pete Angelus was available to become the manager of Black Crowes. Is that right?
Pete Angelus stayed with them, actually. I think he even stayed around with Chris some at the Chris Robinson Brotherhood. But it wasn't until recently that he broke ranks with them.
Right.
And now Mark Dedea is managing them.
Gotcha. And he was responsible for bringing them back together for this 2020 tour, from what I understand.
Correct.
All right.
Absolutely. It was all Mark. Mark works at Red Light. For any of you out there that are familiar with it, Red Light Management, he works there. So,
well, let me ask
you. Absolutely his idea.
About Rick Rubin. So Rick Rubin was obviously apprehensive about bringing them in there, wasn't a big supporter. Radio loved it because they were playing the heck out of it in 1990. The fans were listening to it and buying the records. I mean, so finally did he just give in and say, I guess that, you know, this is one time radio and the listeners make the call?
Absolutely he did. Here's a story for you. He was so, I don't even know the word to use. Obviously, he did not want to admit he was wrong. And you know, he's a very strong-minded individual.
Right.
But, actually, it was a very closed, no press incident. When he decided to change the name of the label from Deaf American to American,
mm-hmm.
we were the staff flew out to L.A. and we had a funeral for Deaf American. It was at the Hollywood Cemetery, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it was a star-studded event. Like, Tom Petty was there, Roseanne Arquette, Al Sharpton was there. It was a pretty strange deal. But anyway, there was a casket up front in the chapel where they had the service. And you were allowed to go by and put whatever Deaf American meant to you into the casket and it would be buried.
Wow.
Rick put his gold record of the Black Crowes.
Oh, no way.
Wow.
Holy
cow.
He did.
Wow.
Chris Robinson.
In the Hollywood Cemetery, there's a casket with the Black Crowes record buried in it.
Chris Robinson told me he hated Rick Rubin more than he hated Hitler, if you can believe that.
Wow.
So there was a...
Dude, do you know what he wanted to name the band?
What's that?
He wanted to change the name. Originally, it was Mr. Crowes Garden.
Right.
He wanted to change the name of the band to... They were from Cobb County. He wanted to change the name of the band to the Cobb County Crowes.
Oh.
And start them all with K's.
That's a terrible...
Wow.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
That's horrible.
Absolutely terrible.
All right. Another sidebar. Roseanne Arquette.
Yeah.
The nicest sure. natural boobs ever.
Right.
And then Toto wrote a song about her. What was it? Your big...
Rosanna.
Radio. Yes.
Yes.
Bam.
Are you eating edibles today? You're kind of going down these little wormholes.
I know. It's because I don't really know Chris, and I'm trying to have something to say here. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. Go on.
I kid.
I can't believe we had a drink, 25, 30 years ago on the beach together.
I know. With this ginormous bum.
Big old bum. So let's talk.
You can say ass, Fred.
Yeah. We could say ass.
We have more festivals than you can even imagine in 2020. Back in the 90s, there were festivals. I mean, there was Lollapalooza, but there was one festival called the Horde Festival. Now,
yeah,
you,
I was on it.
You worked that with Lenny
it.
Kravitz,
yep.
And Chris, you had the Black Crowes on there. So Horizons of Artists Developing Everywhere, is that what it meant? I don't know. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I think that's what it is. Horizon of, but the R would not be artist. I mean, I don't know. But Blues Traveler, headed off by John Popper, mm-hmm. was kind of behind it all. They were kind of the headliner. And another band that Chris Robinson did not like very much. In fact, we're going to go back to 1999 right now. And I asked Chris, would it ever be possible for him to go back on Horde Fest after playing the first one? And he said this.
Is there any chance of John Popper dropping 200 pounds?
I think Popper has dropped 200 pounds.
No, that didn't really go over too well. I mean, we had a great time on that tour, met some cool people, but I really, the people involved in the tour, and that would be people like that band and stuff, I don't really have time for them.
So there you go.
Wow. There was a lot of stuff floating around. They had a very, they were a very public fight.
It was a good eclectic festival. I mean, I remember Sheryl Crow played that.
Blind Melon.
Clean up on aisle two.
Yeah, Ziggy Marley was big.
The Melody Makers.
Right,
yeah.
right. So what was that festival as far as you guys remember, since you both had artists that were on it?
Who should go first? Yeah, you're our guest. Right. You go first.
Right.
Damn it.
Oh, you're so nice, guys.
Damn it.
I had a variety of lineups because of my territory, having, you know, Missouri and New Orleans, and I think there were Austin shows, and, you know. So I had dates where it was Blues Traveler, Ziggy Marley, and the Crows. There were dates, like the Austin date, I think, was Sheryl Crow, Blues Traveler, and the Crows.
Yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's it.
And then there were dates with Lenny Kravitz. I guess that would have been New Orleans, Fred.
I had my region was Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana. I remember having New Orleans for Horde for sure, but I can't remember if I had anywhere in Texas.
Right.
And what I remember on that particular tour is Lenny was very retro, and I always loved to do crazy stuff for my radio pals. So one day I went and bought 20 lava lamps. And then I took, and instead of the glass that's glopping, I just took the base.
Right.
And I took them all onto Lenny's bus, and I said, hey, man, I need you to sign these. And I would just tell him what to do, and he'd do it because we're always around.
Right.
So it wasn't like I had to intro in. So he's signing all these things. He goes, what are these? I go, they're lava lamps. He goes, I want one. I said, well, let me think about it. I only have 20. And then, of course, I gave him one.
That's awesome.
On a side note, there were Texas dates with Lenny Kravitz. Because do you remember, were you at the one? It's just the drag strip south.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about that. We're at a drag strip, and a drag strip is asphalt. Okay. And it's summer.
Right.
And it's so hot. Lenny literally passes out. I mean, he literally passes out, and he wasn't, I'm trying to remember, do you remember, Chris, was he on stage and he had to come off, or was it walking to the
Absolutely
stage?
Absolutely was. I can remember what he was wearing.
Okay, so tell me, because I kind of forgot. I remember we had to get him into emergency tent, like ASAP.
Yeah, it was maybe three songs into the set. The stage was set up on a black asphalt pavement.
Yeah.
So all that heat, just, you know, you're in the middle of Texas in the summer, what do you want? But I'm sure the leather contributed to it, you know.
Oh, they're all wearing bell-bottom Levi blue jeans.
All right, Chris, what was he wearing? You said you remembered it. What was Lenny wearing before he passed down?
He's wearing brown leather pants and top. I remember him going on thinking, Jesus, you're wearing leather, and it's like 100 degrees.
Wow.
Hey, can I go down another wormhole?
You just go down any rabbit hole you want.
All right. So,
it's all about you, buddy.
All right, so with all the bands I was out with, Phil Lynott was pretty stinky. But Lenny,
wow,
No, like B.O., like natural B.O. stinky.
Oh,
because
wow.
he was a wonderful human being and a great bass player and a great lead singer.
Just didn't like soap.
So I told you my story about Phil Lynott giving me his tour sweatshirt and I had to put it in a plastic bag in
because
my trunk.
It smelled so bad.
Yeah. Well, Lenny was a lot the same way, and he's very natural, which
right.
means he probably never really used deodorant because he just didn't believe in it.
Right.
But we had to participate in that decision whether we were, you know, in on it or not. All right, sorry.
Let me interject something here because, as you mentioned, Chris, after Horde Festival ended, the Black Crowes did go on the road with Lenny Kravitz, and Chris talked a little bit about, you know, why it was necessary for bands to be on these package tours.
Well, you know, it's funny because there, you know, once, you know, where we are these days, packages are much bigger than it's a lot easier to go out as a package and to go out on your own. Lenny was going to, you know, I think the type of thing is, and it's funny because I spoke to Lenny the other day, and his first record came out 6 months before our first record. And we were, for the big copycat retro 70s guys, it's right. funny that we're the only people making music and then that are around from that era. And it just so happened that, you know, like, we couldn't go do that tour on our own, and I don't think he could do that tour on his own, but together we could go out and do this thing, you know? So it just, it's just good timing.
Yeah.
Definitely
yeah.
think we have the strongest show for your buck.
Right. So there you go. It's, you know, pretty amazing to hear him talk like that in 1999. Yeah, here we are, you know, over 20 years later. And that's what it's all about, especially in the rock world. You really can't make it unless you're on a good package tour.
Yeah. We're going to have a good friend of mine, Mike Easterlin, who's one of the guys who runs Elektra Records today out of New York. And in that podcast, he's going to explain to us how the record business works today. The only thing I can share with everybody right now is it's called the 360 deal.
Right.
And we'll let him explain it. Because he'll do it better than I would. And even if you know Chris, let's leave that for him. That's part of the deal now is you got to package these shows to pull the people.
Right.
And they're now counting on everything, merchandising, everything, endorsements, everything.
It's pretty amazing since these guys haven't toured in such a long time to really decide what would be the hot cities. I mean, do you remember, Chris, any cities that obviously you worked that were huge for the Black Crowes? Because, and the reason I ask that is because Austin was in your territory back then. That's where they're doing the first date of their tour. So maybe talk about some of the markets that really jumped out.
Everything I worked for was in the Southeast, and you know, they took on really, it didn't take long at all for them to catch on in the Southeast. Obviously Texas was always good to them. Atlanta, Nashville, believe it or not, Oklahoma was always very good to the Crowes.
Yeah.
Always big crowds in Tulsa, you know, because a lot of times you get a band that comes through and they're on that verge of venue, I call it. You know, they're a little bit too big to play a 5,000 seater, but not quite big enough to step up to the next level.
Right.
So the band has to make a decision on whether to play two small dates or a larger date. And they were always able to pull in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. Anyway, getting off the side.
No, that's actually good information.
Yeah, because I mean, I think they've got some really select cities that are good music towns, first of all, and then to get to hear the band do Shake Your Moneymaker from front to back is cool. I mean, the Eagles are doing that as well with Hotel California. So not only are we getting kind of reunions, but also, you know, bands performing these, you know, They're best of the best.
Another wormhole.
I got to say something here. You bringing up the Eagles. I'm going to take a total left turn. The whole thing about Linda Ronstadt was great, man.
Thank you.
I learned so much stuff from that. That was very cool.
David Kahn did a great job talking about the early days, and then to see the Sound of My Voice documentary. I mean, it just, the timing when that came out was amazing.
The other rabbit hole I was going to go down real quick, and I'll give it back to you two,
All right. Is
I was lucky enough to take my daughter, I think it was about 2 years ago, when Stevie Wonder decided to do Songs in the Key of Life.
Oh, wow.
Which was front to back.
Man.
Which was brilliant, because that's such a brilliant album. So conceptually, I would love to see more really strong bands like that do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I worked at Warner Brothers when we released Donald Fagen as a solo artist, and his solo record had so many great, because it was a story.
What was that called? The Nightfly?
Yes, Nightfly.
Like yeah.
And it was actually every single song connected to the next, and it was a story. And I remember being in a radio station where I got friends with like an engineer, and he had a play in his head about this album,
right,
conceptually, because he really got it. So anyway, sorry. Give it back to you, boys.
Well,
here's a good one. You're talking about albums that go out on the road.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances of Fleetwood Mac ever getting Lindsey Buckingham back to do a Rumors tour?
You know, it would be great, but in my opinion, and this is just me talking to you two guys, I think what they did to him is a long-lasting wound that I don't think they're going to recover from.
Right, I agree. But like I said,
I didn't think Rich was going to recover from this one either, though.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think Motley Crue was coming back, but $150 million talks, so who knows?
Oh, but that's another one where they couldn't command that kind of they needed to package that tour.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's Poison, Joan Jett.
And I'm surprised Def Leppard doesn't pull better than they do.
They do
frankly.
Great, though. I mean, honestly, Def Leppard could go out on the road.
They've been on tour for 40 years.
They could go out on the road by themselves, which they did previously. I just think that they probably got a bigger guarantee if they would do it with Motley Crue and then Poison and Joan Jett.
Yeah, and I get all that. I've got an attitude about Motley Crue for the fact that they are a sunset glam band that stole all their from Alice Cooper.
No.
So there you have it. But that doesn't mean I don't like them and their songs. But I thought Dirt was like a B film.
I thought they stole more from Kiss, but they just made it a little more raunchier.
See, yeah. I think they took everything, all their shtick from Alice.
Yeah, well, I can see a little bit of all that. Well,
all
I wanted to
shtick, but if you take away all that and listen to their music, that's a very unique band.
It is a unique band.
Well, I had Van Halen, so I was kind of like, come on, man, let's go head to head and let's see who comes out of this on top.
There's another one. Get Dave in shape to do Van Halen 1. That would be great.
Yeah, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, problem there is it's his voice. It's just that his voice isn't going to last.
That's why he's doing show tunes now in Vegas.
Yeah.
I hope it lasts.
Hey, Lloyd?
Yes.
I will be your, I just had it. Y'all come back. Here we go. I'll be your research dude for this episode.
All right.
HORD stands for Horizons of Rock Developing Everywhere.
Rock.
Wow. So
I had artists, but it's rock. Okay, perfect. Back to the Black Crowes. And, you know, the guys have even joked about it as they were selling the fact that they were getting back together. And, of course, the question that always gets asked of them is about their notorious fights. Now, you, I know, went through probably one of their biggest fights because it was in the media. It was in your market. It was in San Antonio. So, tell us about that knockdown dragout that you got to witness ringside.
Yeah, I mean, they were infamous for fighting, but nobody ever took them seriously because they fought like girls, let's be honest. You know, they would turn their head and slap each other. So nobody was ever really concerned anybody's going to get injured enough that they couldn't perform. You know, you watched Rich's hands. That was about it.
Right.
Them fighting was no big deal. But it really came to a head at Sunken Gardens in San Antonio. That's the one that Gorm is talking about in his book. And rest his soul, Ray Compton, we all know him.
He's I know Ray.
Beaver Productions out of New Orleans. Shout out to Ray. only guy that's ever been thrown out of New Orleans by the mayor. Ray was the guy with Beaver out on the road. And they loved Ray to death. Ray was a big burly. You didn't say, you know, he was going to knock you into a corner. And the band's late going on stage at Sunken Gardens, so I get sent to go get the band. There was like, you walk up these stairs, and I look up, and Compton's standing at the end of the door just laughing, and I hear this ruckus going on in the background, and I go in there, and I look through the door, and Chris and Rich are going at it. So I start to go, and Compton just grabs me by the back of the shirt, and just let him go a minute. Let's see what happens. So we sat back and watched them, and finally got in the middle, and they went on stage, and it was like they came off stage and it's like they stopped mid-sentence to go play a show. And when they came off stage, they weren't even off stage and they were right back at each other's throats right where they left off.
Brothers.
So that went on, you know, yeah, absolutely. And it became comical to pretty much everybody else out there, you know. It was good fun.
It was good.
But Rich really took it to fence that night. And he used some rather colorful language and said that by the time tomorrow got there, he would have his own tour bus. So we all rode the bus. Rich got a limo that night from San Antonio to Houston and shows up at the last minute for the show in Houston. And after the show, lo and behold, Rich had his own bus. So it came down to Rich going through and telling everybody, please ride with me on my bus, and you better not get Chris any drugs or you're fired. And then Rich following, or Chris following right behind and going, you better not ride on Rich's bus. And if you don't get me any drugs, you're fired.
That's a tough one. What do you do?
Well, you know, Chris ran the show.
Yes. One other thing that you and I have talked about previously is, you know, with all the ruckus and, you know, all the partying and everything about the Black Crowes, and you just think they're, you know, just out of for sex, drugs, and rock and roll. They did have a really great side to them about giving something back. And Chris, if you will, share the Oklahoma City story that you told me. And
They were scheduled to play a show within a week or so after the Oklahoma City bombing. And of course we canceled the show. I can't remember what the name of the theater is there, but it's not far from the bomb site. What they agreed to do was, people won't know, but remember this, but there used to be, it was a magazine and also just a chain of stations called Album Network.
Yeah.
Lloyd, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they have like Saturday night broadcasts that you were, if you had
a
radio program?
Yes, they had special.
You could opt into.
Right, right. Radio stations could kind of pick up these specials, and it could be a live concert or an exclusive interview with some big rock stars.
Right. So once again, Mark D got on the ball and got this, with Tommy Nast, I think was at Album Network then. Got this all set up within 4 weeks, and they played a free show for Oklahoma City and all the proceeds from the radio stations, and then they also did 800 lines. All of it went to the bomb victims' families, and that was a pretty heavy thing, though. We went and met the mayor that afternoon and walked the site. It was pretty intense, but you know, that's the side of that band that you just don't see, you know?
The great story.
Yeah.
Speaking of tour buses, because someday Promotion Man's going to go on the road and we're going to get our own tour bus.
Yeah, that's right.
And I've been on so many that I already know exactly what color, what model. Nice. I've already got it down. But my question to you, Chris, is what's one of your, can you remember any funny tour bus story? The girl that's chasing it naked?
I'm going to go right back. No, well, those stories are all over the place. The worst tour bus story, I almost brought it up a minute ago when you were talking about how bad Lenny Kravitz smelled. You know as well as I do, when bands get on the road, you know, by the end of a tour, they are so freaking bored. They're doing ridiculous things to amuse themselves.
Yes, right? Yes. So, that's what opens it up to mayhem. Boredom.
Well, you know, the typical drugs and sex, everybody knows, goes on.
It does?
This show was in El Paso in the middle of the summer. So once
K-L-A-Q.
Texas, hot as balls. And these guys, Chris had gotten two bulldogs, Skunk and Doyle. And the dogs have been on the bus for months now. Skunk and Doyle.
Skunk and Doyle.
And the dogs have been on the bus for, I don't know, a month at this point. And, you know, they smoke cigarettes on the bus, smoke weed on the bus. Well, Johnny and I think it was Eddie Harsh, the keyboard player, decided to have a contest to see who could go the longest without showering.
Oh my God, that's
and,
a terrible idea.
Yeah. And Johnny wore the same black leather pants on stage every night.
Oh, God.
So this at this point, awful. I had opted. I'm not riding the bus anymore. I'm
no.
Everybody hated me because I could do that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So it got to the point where they wouldn't even let him carry his pants on the bus. His pants had to go with his gear in the 18-wheeler. But they went every night before they would go on, they would bring Johnny's pants in and put them on the bus for him to get dressed. And, dude, you could stand these things up in the corner, and they had a life of their own.
Oh, my God.
And
I remember.
I hope to God he burned those.
I remember. There was always the golden rule, no pooping on the bus.
Right. I can only imagine the ass soup in those leather jeans when he was on stage, man.
Oh, God, it was so disgusting.
I'm sure that scrot was floating.
I'm getting really bad.
Well, Chris,
we didn't even have to go into any Black Crowes drug stories.
Right.
Because we know they did them. So let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, I think these have been some good stories, man. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing this tour. It's you know, we had a previous podcast about the tours of 2020, and this is definitely on my top three list for sure.
Yeah, get us tickets, Chris.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Call your boy.
I'm actually going to go to New York and see them with my daughter.
Wow.
I've got a great Chris Robinson story that we can close out on. Okay
perfect.
It totally tells you Chris Robinson's character. When my oldest daughter was born, we induced labor for her, and I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it was on an off day between Crow shows. Chris was one of the first people, I don't know, first handful of people to come by and hold my oldest daughter other than hospital staff.
Oh, wow.
So as years went by, I would take Jordan down to sound check. And then she got into her teens and she's like, Dad, I want, this is when Hort Festival is going on. And, you know, she's wanting to go to these festivals. And I'm like, honey, you're just too young. There's too much goes on. I can't take you there and do my job. So she made me promise that when she turned 21, that I would take her to one. Don't you know this kid, lo and behold, when she turned 21, she's living on Maui, calls me up and says, the Crows are playing a festival outside of Charlottesville, Virginia. I've already booked my plane ticket.
Wow.
So I'm
good
kinda,
girl.
So I call up Pete Angelus, you're talking about, and got tickets and backstage passes. And we go to this thing, and it's like a dead thing. You know, Bob Weir's there, Phil Lesh, you know, the whole thing.
Right.
Anyway, there's porta potties, and we're walking down the stage, and she's got to go so bad, and they're also crowded. And I'm like, let's just wait till we get backstage. The minute we walk in the backstage, I see Chris talking to Phil Lesh, go up, say my highs and everything. And I'm like, listen, pointing at my daughter, don't even introduce her. I said, is there a place she can go to the bathroom? And he's like, yeah, our tour bus is right there. So she goes walking off, and she's walking off behind me. And I'm standing there talking to him, and I just start counting down in my head, this son of a 10, 9. I got to about 7, and he's like, man, who is that babe you're with? Like, you dirty old man.
And you told him, right? And then what did he say?
On tour this year. Oh. He felt very embarrassed.
I bet he was shocked. I had to do the same thing.
All you girls that are going to be listening and they're going to go see them this year, and all you dads that are going to take your daughters, watch out.
Oh, my God, for Chris. He's still on the prowl. He does not have a girlfriend right now, I don't think.
So. I mean, no, I had to do the very same thing. My daughter finally said, Dad, I want to go to one of these shows, and it was Van Halen with Sammy Hagar.
Right.
And it was here at South Park Meadows. So she got to go on their tour bus and the backstage passes and the whole thing. And this was like, and I took her to a lot of stuff. Right. Her and Lenny were very close, but this was like a big, big, you know, show. And it's the same thing. You're like, God, I don't, what am I going to expose her to? You know, she's like 14.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, man, we know what goes on back there. Thank you for calling
in.
Guys,
it's been a blast.
Yeah.
I'm walking down memory lane. Hope you get to go see one of the shows.
Oh, I'm definitely
planning listen,
on for sure.
While we've been talking to you, we've been putting a kitty together to get you a snowblower. So we're going to send you the money so we can get you a snowblower.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm too old for this, guys.
Yeah, right? Thanks, Chris.
All right, Chris.
Good talking to both of you guys.
See you.
See you, man.
Bye.
Promotion Man. The true backstories of the most iconic bands in the world told by Fred Myers and interviewed by me, L.A. Lloyd. Get involved and interact on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You'll find the links at promotion-man.com. That's promotion-man.com. Download the weekly Promotion Man podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. We appreciate you subscribing and spreading the word, and thanks for listening.